Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, March 22nd, 2024. It is 1:16 p.m. We are meeting in the Max Grinberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building here in Juneau. I ask that you please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Shelby with the Juneau LAO and Sophia with House Records. The following members present is Representative Johnson, Representative Carpenter. Vice Chair Allard has not been excused, and myself, Chair Vance. We have two items on today's calendar, and that is to hear from the governor's appointee to the State Commission for Human Rights, and then bring back House Bill 358, Prohibit AI-Altered Representations by Representative Kronk. First on the agenda, we will hear from the governor's appointee to the State Commission for Human Rights, Ms. Rebecca Carrillo. If she is with us in the room today, if you would please join us up here at the table, state your name for the record, and introduce yourself and tell us why you want to serve on the commission.
Good afternoon, Chair Sarah Vance, Representative Carpenter, Representative Johnson, and guests, and of course staff. My name is Rebecca Carrillo, and I'm just going to answer to the chair your question. This is my second term appointment to the Alaska State Human Rights Commission, and I would like to continue the work that I began 3 years ago, because the work that I have been involved in is a continuation of the work that I have done pretty much as a state employee for 32 and a half years, and as a lead for the Alaska Supplemental Food Program for Women and Children, and that's with the Division of Public Health. As a component of that role, I was charged with civil rights and disability accommodation, serving women, infants, and children with nutritional risk. And with the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights, we deal with issues that are important to me as an individual, important to me as a minority, and the diverse issues that impact my life day to day, and those of our fellow Alaskans and populations of diverse backgrounds and needs. There are meaningful ways that I see the commission resolving issues from discrimination and inequalities, and providing opportunities to resolve those differences in manners that are meaningful, fair, and equitable. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carrillo. Any questions from the committee members? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you've served on the board, I'm drawing a blank here on which commission we're talking about. Maybe one thing that you're proud of, the work that you've done thus far, and then maybe one thing that you think still needs to be done and that you're looking forward to achieving or working towards.
The work that I'm proud of as part of the commission is that the ongoing dialogue that happens when me and my fellow commission members have in talking about conversations that we have within the commissions on how to, for instance, engage our own communities in issues that are of relevance. For instance, issues in accommodating, looking into how Just recently, we were talking about how we can improve education for children with visual disability, how we would look into incorporating Braille. It's a big task, but it's not an impossibility. Looking how perhaps legislation can impact that kind of change so that students with disabilities, with visual disabilities in particular, can be afforded the same kind of access to better quality education than children without those kinds of barriers. Other issues is we all have loved ones who are elderly. We all maybe have experiences with elderly loved ones and neighbors who live alone or who have need assistance in navigating everyday lives in terms of reading their medication labels, helping discern which medications are to be taken in the morning and at night, but they have visual impairments. Maybe they have magnifying glasses to read their prescriptions. Maybe we need to advocate for pharmacists or pharmaceutical industries to label their prescriptions in bigger fonts. And those things did not come to mind because I can still read. But obviously, those are challenges for elderly people. And those two scenarios fall within areas of equality and quality of life for these two particular demographics. So those are the kinds of things that we look forward to as a commission to doing and achieving down the road. And I'm proud to be part of someday realizing those kinds of things happening, or even if I don't get appointed, the commission can achieve in sooner than later, but eventually happen for our loved ones, for our neighbors.
Follow up?
I guess I'd kind of like to know what's going on the commission. What's most recently been happening, and if as a current member, maybe you could just give us a heads up on what are the issues that you've most recently been working on.
I know the commission has had a recent move, office move from the 8th Street building, because there have been a lot of issues in that location in terms of safety to the staff, in terms of the discomfiture that clients have within the location of that office in terms of privacy, in terms of physical safety. So we're happy that we've been allowed to move to a new building in Bergall, obviously a bigger space, and affords a lot more privacy in terms of when people come up. When people come for intake, they don't feel like conversations are overheard by other offices other than those with the Human Rights Commission. There have been a change or a an increase or a move towards more outreach from the commission towards the community about how they feel the commission is functioning, how effective is it in reaching the needs of the community. And there are more automated kind of surveys that being instituted, YouTube, Google survey, television ads. And that's the public response to those kinds of surveys and feedbacks are being tracked automatically via some, I'm not very techie, how many clicks, you know, for this kind of ads, to determine how many people are responding to a specific way of advertising, what kinds of questions people are responding to, questions that are geared to what kind of changes people are looking for the commission to do.
One last question, I think. In your time that you've served, what do you think your biggest strengths are that you bring to the board or to the commission?
The board is a 7-member commission. The commission is comprised of 7 commissioners from different parts of the states, from Anchorage, from Sitka, from Fairbanks, from Juneau, and of different ethnic backgrounds. My strength, good afternoon, Representative Gray, Representative Representative Sumner. My name is Rebecca Carrillo. The strength that I bring to the commission, is that, one, I'm a minority myself. I have lived in 2 worlds. One in the Philippines, a third world country with many different challenges. 2 in Juneau for 43 years. I have navigated different cultures. I have myself been through discrimination of many forms. But I can speak to the fact that discrimination doesn't necessarily make you can transform one's life for the better. It can make you contribute good things to your community if one makes an effort to do so, because it lends a. I see my experiences as an individual through different lenses. It makes me more tolerant of differences. It makes me more patient, and it just makes me more a participatory individual in terms of making people more understanding that, yes, our voices might be singular, but they need not divide us. This might sound kind of trite, but there are more things that can unite us than what makes us different.
Thank you.
Any further questions from committee members? Thank you, Ms. Carrillo. You have an impressive resume, and sounds like that you are pursuing good work on the commission. I want to thank you for coming before us in person today and for your previous service on the commission. I'm going to open up public testimony for Ms. Carrillo's appointment. And is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, I do not see anyone online, so I'm now going to close public testimony. If anyone watching online did not have an opportunity to testify on the appointment of Ms. Carrillo to the Commission on Human Rights, you can submit your written testimony to house.judiciary@akleg.gov, and it will be submitted to the public record. I just want to thank you once again for coming. We will take a brief at ease to sign the report.
Thank you.
Before I do that, I do need to read the statement that says, in accordance with AS 39.05.080, the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing on the following appointee. A signature on this report does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of Ms. Carrillo during any further sessions. Brief at ease. I would like to let the record reflect that at 1:26 we were joined by Representative Sumner, and at 1:27 by Representative Groh and Representative Gray. For our second and final item on the agenda today, we will bring back House Bill 358, Prohibit AI-Altered Representations by Representative Kronk in its second hearing. There is a proposed committee substitute. Representative Carpenter, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that the committee adopt the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 358, version 33, LS1272/Uniform-U, as the committee's new working document.
Object, please, for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Groh.
I know, I think we got this at 11:49 a.m. I think that was the email, the time of the email when we were on the floor. I do think, as I've said before, this is both an important area and involves some very tricky decision-making. So I just note that there is an odd quality to us adopting it with this short notice.
Brief at ease. Back on record, Representative Groh.
Madam Chair, I fully recognize the difficulties as the session goes on and we're in the second half of working with legislative legal in the sense of getting some documents back. I removed my objection on the condition, and obviously it's going to happen, that we have a really thorough explanation of what we're doing here. And I did want to note that it did seem odd to me. Thank you.
I will object for purposes of discussion so we can hear it.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. And again, our apologies on this. You did get the version S in the proper amount of timing, but we found there was a couple of language. There's a little bit of language we wanted to clarify, but I am going to set an amendment deadline so that we can further discuss this. This is such a new topic in law for us that I want us to really dig in and make sure that we're working through, and this is a beginning discussion piece. So right now I'd like to invite my policy advisor, Mr. Bob Ballinger, to come and walk us through the changes in the committee substitute, and Mr. Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Kronk.
Bob Ballinger, the policy advisor for Representative Vance.
Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Kronk.
First, let me reiterate the apology. It was relatively late yesterday that we got version S back. And the difference, and that was one that got sent out right away, but the difference between version S and version U is we felt like the way that it was written was a little more confusing. So version S basically said, you can use deepfakes in electioneering communication so long as you use this disclosure and all that. So it kind of felt more like you're providing a license rather than creating a prohibition with the exceptions or the defense. So we basically asked them to go back and rearrange that section, and that's the difference between S and U. And from visiting with the staff for the bill sponsor, they would like to have the opportunity to have this version presented to other folks to take a look at it. And so if people through this process have great ideas, he's certainly open, and the chair is open to more amendments if they're necessary.
Through the chair, I confirm that statement is correct.
If you could please just walk us through what this committee substitute does.
Yes. So first, I mean, honestly, there's no need to compare it to the original bill because the committee substitute just basically replaces the original bill. And it starts off in Section 1 with, we didn't want to create this to be all about electioneering communication without providing a mechanism to the individual citizen. And so what this does is this says that if you use a deepfake in the same manner that would equate to defamation, that it would be defamation per se. And so a defamation per se is that you can assume that there are damages. And so if you meet all the other elements of defamation, then it would be defamation per se. In Alaska, you guys actually don't have a statute that lays out defamation. It's all within common law. And so instead of creating all that statute, which is not necessarily easy to do, you know, we made an attempt at it, but we hate to mess with some of the nuances We just said specifically the defamation per se, or that if you use a deep fake and that's defined, then it is defamation per se. And this definition you see, the pointed to here, is going to be the same definition that we use throughout. So the next section, section two, addresses the problem that we've been dealing with and talking about in our office, dealing with child sexual exploitation or child pornography when there's actually not a child involved in the process. So currently under Alaska law, if you use an image of a kid and, you know, it could be a kid playing in the front yard, and then you manipulate it to make it look like nudity, that's actually been prosecuted as child pornography, which I hope will be child sexual abuse material eventually. That has been prosecuted, and that works. The gap is, what if it is made to look exactly like a kid, but it only used AI? You know, it could be little Susie living down the road, or it could be some, you know, superstar who's also a kid, you know, and it's made to look like that person and it looks real, then is that prosecutable? And honestly, that has not been challenged in court. And so that could be a little bit awkward, because the current case law says clearly if a real kid is used, then it's fine. So, but what we're trying to argue is if you use the real kid's likeness, then that by itself is enough to be, you know, child sexual abuse material. And so that's what section one, number two, just describes, that if it's identifiable as a child under 18 years of age, it's identifiable as an actual child, then is manipulated or mutified using artificial intelligence, which is defined in here, then you're guilty of the possessing or distributing child pornography under current law and child sexual abuse material, I think, hopefully by the time the session's done. So in section three, we have the definition for artificial intelligence. This actually came from a law passed in Washington, I believe. And so artificial intelligence means an automated system that uses data input, human-defined objectives, and machine learning, natural language processing, or other computational processing techniques of similar or greater complexity to make a decision or facilitate a human decision-making. So, which is, you know, commonly what we refer to as artificial intelligence. So in section four is actually much more getting into the context of what the original bill was. A combination between section four and section one, it covers what the original bill was intended to cover. And this is deepfakes in electioneering communication. And it basically, it says a person may not use a deepfake in electioneering communication made with the intent to influence an election. Then more detail, an individual whose speech, conduct, or likeness is manipulated in a deepfake, which we also have defined in here, in violation of this section, may bring an action in superior court to recover damages, attorney's fees, and costs. Then if you look down here, the actual individuals that you can recover from are the person who created the deepfake or retained the services of another individual who created a deepfake. Or you can recover damages from a person who, if you've done everything, which we're going to talk about here, to provide the defense for a deepfake, the disclosure, but you provide it to somebody else and they remove that disclosure, that they also could be held liable for it. And C, an individual whose speech, conduct, or likeness is manipulated in deepfake violation of this section may seek injunctive relief in order to remove it from publication. So you not only have the ability to get damages, but if they're using this deepfake material, then you can have it removed from publication, you know, whether it's on the internet or radio or wherever it is. All right, so it is a defense to this action if you use this disclosure. So the disclosure is real simple. It just says this image, video, audio has been manipulated. And so if you do this, there's a couple different ways, you guys can read it. You can go through all of it, but on a visual material, it's got to be posted in a way that's readable. If it has other font on it, it's got to be the same size, the largest font that you use in the material. If it's a audio or video, if it's video, it's got to remain on the video throughout the time. If it's only audio, it has to appear on the first and the end of the audio. Unless the audio recording is longer than 2 minutes, then it has to you have to have that audio placed in there at least every 2 minutes. Then you have the exception for interactive computer service. So if you have a this basically is social media. So somebody who gets a deep fake from one place, publishes it, then this gives an out for the social media platforms, saying they're not liable for that. So they're cut out. Then we get the definition of deep fake, which I think is kind of it's sort of what it's all about, so it's probably important. It means a visual or audio media that is created, altered, or otherwise manipulated by artificial intelligence, but also we talked about that definition, in a manner that the reasonable observer appears to be authentic. So to a reasonable observer, someone looking at it, they think it's real. And the second part of it conveys a fundamentally different understanding or impression than that of the individual's appearance. So not only is it looks real, but it gives a completely different understanding than what was legitimate. So the individual who's given a speech and he says, I love puppies, but you know, not communists. And if they take the word not and they put it in front of whatever, or it says, but I hate communists, and they take hate and they say, I hate puppies, but love communists. Right. So it gives a completely different message that would fall in that category. And then if you look down, number three is the definition for electioneering communication, which basically means a communication that directly identifies a candidate or a political party, is disseminated through mail, newspaper, internet. So the more common places that you would see election material being distributed out to an audience that includes voters that have the opportunity to vote for the candidate. And see, when read at a whole, basically with limited interference, a person looking at it would think that it was designed to affect an election. All right, so if an information content provider, we use that term in here, and interactive computer service have meetings as defined under 47 U.S.C. 230, and then the rest has to do with the implementation, basically saying that this is not going to be retroactive, which would be unconstitutional if we try to do that. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We also have Ian Walsh, Legislative Counsel, who is the drafter of this CS, available online for questions, as well as Mr. Ballinger and Mr. Stancliffe. So questions from committee members. Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on the definition of artificial intelligence, I just have a slight issue with human-defined objectives, and I'd say that because of the way that some of these artificial intelligence programs are created nowadays. They're essentially large matrices of weights that are trained on data sets, and to the degree that they can be said to have objectives, I don't know that those are human-defined or even scrutable. As far as what their objectives may be. So I would say that I don't think we'd lose anything by just striking human-defined objectives from that.
Representative Sumner, do you have a question for either Mr. Ballinger or Legislative Legal? My question back to you is the right after it says human-defined objectives, it includes machine learning. So is what you're talking about could be the machine learning?
Sorry, Madam Chair. It says and machine learning. So I would take that to mean both elements. And I think you could possibly put an or there, but I don't think we lose much by removing human-defined objectives, since machines can even now be trained by other artificial intelligence programs on data that is generated by artificial intelligence programs. And you can really have humans completely removed from that. So...
Mr. Ballinger.
Been a long time since I was called a representative. Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's aide. So to answer that, I think probably for this legislation, it's probably better to include it. However, if we were just going to generally define artificial intelligence, you're 100% right. So artificial intelligence doesn't take any outside input. It can decide to create itself and modify other things on its own. That's the nature of artificial intelligence. If it is allowed, you know, in its original programming to do that, then it can do that. The only thing here is we want to actually have a person that can be held liable, either criminally or civilly. And so in this, you know, it would be impossible to file the lawsuit against the artificial intelligence, at least today. But if artificial intelligence gets to the point where later on it's, you know, somebody creates a program where it is designed to make decisions about elections and engage in election, all that. You made the reference to Terminator. That's where we're at, you know. So at that point, there's going to be we have a real problem that would be bigger than electioneering communication, I think.
Follow up, Representative Sumner. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any questions pertaining to the adoption of the CS, although I do have some questions about the CS. So.
Do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection to adopting the CS.
Hearing no further objections, the committee substitute for House Bill 358, version U, let me double check, version U has been adopted. Representative Carpenter.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I think I would, my first thing here is going to the definition of deepfake. Am I to understand that what we're establishing here is that the deepfake must be something that is where an AI likeness has to convey something different about a person before it's considered a deepfake? Meaning, if somebody created an artificial version of somebody else and put that forward, and they were that artificial presentation was communicating something that another individual did say at a particular time or was appropriately quoted, but never actually spoke at a particular event or never did what the artificial intelligence was portraying them, but they are accurately quoting them. Is that also a deep fake?
So Bob Ballinger, staff, Representative Vance, through the chair to Representative Carpenter. So the answer you have to do, I mean, it can be considered a defect or defined a defect, but it may not be a civil action or a criminal action unless it meets the electioneering communication or it's child pornography or child sexual abuse material. The question is would that be interpreted as something that is contrary to something that actually happened? And I don't know the answer to that. That seems like a difficult question when it was an actual quote that a person said. But the person actually didn't. The video is not a legitimate video of the person saying it. I think that it would be hard to argue that is contrary. Let me go and get to the definition. It'd be hard to argue that it conveys a fundamentally different understanding or impression of the individual appearance, action, speech that is a reasonable person would have from the altered original version. So the argument would be, yes, it did, because that was never spoken, but I don't know that would meet this standard.
Follow up. So, and I guess I would just juxtapose the concept of a legislator speaking on the floor, and there is video recording of that, and somebody taking that transcript and creating an artificial intelligence image that is then speaking that same transcript, but putting it in a different setting than the legislative setting to communicate that to, for a political purpose, for whatever's happening. If it's an event or a TV ad or radio spot or something like that, the perception would be that person is speaking for that particular event, and they are speaking something that was accurately quoted from a previous speech, but they're not actually doing it because the artificial intelligence was created and the context is different.
Yeah.
That wouldn't fall into this category as a deep fake, my understanding.
Yeah, and I think the question is it fundamentally different because that speech was not given, you know, in front of a large crowd or whatever? And I would say probably not. It probably wouldn't rise to the level of deepfake. And it, of course, the video would have to be used in electioneering communication before it ever be the question would be relevant on whether it's a deepfake or not. But if it is, I still think that you may get down to that definition, and a person could make a reasonable argument to say, no, it's not fundamentally different. It is a speech that I gave. This image does look like me, and it seems reasonable. So I think that would probably be hard to. I would imagine, like, if somebody came to me and wanted me to bring that case, my recommendation is save your money. You probably aren't going to win that civil suit.
Follow up.
No, it's time.
Representative Sumner. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jumping off of Representative Carpenter's questioning about the floor, or someone giving a floor speech, and then that floor speech being used in a different way. I think when we hear Representative Sumner's line of questioning going into the AI programming other AI and who's actually responsible, I want to go way step back to just very, very nuts and bolts. If somebody took a video of somebody, but then altered it so that its meaning was just the opposite of what the politician had intended, and then used that on the political stage, is that a deep fake? I mean, I guess how complicated does the change have to be considered a deep fake that this bill would cover?
No, Bob Ballinger, staff for Representative Vance, through the chair to Representative Gray. The answer is that I think it would apply so long as you use artificial intelligence to do it. So now almost every video editing software does. But if you decide to have it on reel, you're going to cut and do whatever. Like, if you're doing it without artificial intelligence, then it wouldn't apply to this. But if you're using artificial intelligence, like most video editing software, and you're manipulating it to bring not and put it in front of a word or whatever, mm-hmm. to convey a different message, a fundamentally different message, then it would fall into deepfake.
Follow up.
Would it hurt the bill if we amended it to include taking a reel of film, cutting out the necessary word, restitching it back together?
In short, it may change the bill because this bill's been about artificial intelligence, and so you're just dealing with false electioneering communication. But that would be something I think primarily for the bill sponsor.
Chair Dave Stanko, staff to Representative Kronk. I think we can go as broad as we want to go, and it gets more and more complicated to get something done in this this legislative session. So I think we need to keep it narrow and complicate or concentrate on deepfake. I think that's where we started out. It's when people use whatever they use to manipulate a message or develop an attack on a person. I suppose we've had cases that have already dealt with that didn't have anything to do with deepfake. And the bar is pretty high because this is a business where you're allowed a lot of dirty business if you want to use it. Artificial intelligence is to the point where you don't know who you're looking at, what they really said, and it's all being done so well that the average person, unless there's some sort of nomenclature, would have no idea. So I would ask the chair to keep it more focused on the deepfake.
And I would like to remind the committee members, we also have Ian Walsh, the drafter, available online to answer any pertinent legal questions. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You read my mind. Through the chair to Mr. Walsh, is it current? I mean, can you talk a little bit about how illegal it is to alter someone's words or image without using artificial intelligence and then using that altered image or words or recording in political ads against them, for example?
For the record, this is Ian Walsh, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Gray. I think for the first part of your question, it would probably fall at least under the common law framework of defamation that Mr. Ballinger referenced earlier. So if somebody was creating some false edited video or other media, it could likely fall under defamation. I would have to do some detailed research into the existing election laws to tell you whether or not it might be covered by another statutory prohibition. So if the committee would like, I can do a little bit of research and get back to them on that. But the bill right now just applies to the sort of artificial intelligence that modifies something to be fundamentally different than it would, than it appears.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a question on line 231, the size of the font. I mean, this is in the weeds a little bit. If I read this correctly, if you use AI, that you must declare that AI in a font not smaller than the largest font of other text in the material. So I envision a two-minute video or even a paper ad, a newspaper ad, that uses artificial intelligence where they have a headline that's all the way across the page, and then it goes into detail. What this is that notification must be the same size as that headline. Am I reading that wrong, or is that just...
That's right, not the problem.
And so I just can't see practical. I mean, once you get it beyond where it's readable, I don't think it needs to be as big as the headline, because then you got the headline, and the only thing you have on the page after that is this disclaimer. There's no room for any other information. So I can see that as being a problem, and so I'd like to look at adjusting that to something that says even our paid for by has certain sizes and limitations. So I'd hate to say created by our artificial intelligence, big, and paid for by. So at least some kind of area that is workable, because I don't think the way this is written, it's workable, even in print.
Bob Ballinger, Representative Anstuffs, through the chair to Representative Johnson. I actually thought a little bit about that after we got this back. The one thing that makes it where I'm not as, you know, I don't see it as quite the same problem. This only applies when you're using deep fake in electioneering communication. So, you know, if you're using just an image, then it's not a problem. It's when you're using an image in a way that is contrary to what actually happened. And so then if that's the case and you're going to do that ad, then you just have to modify how you do your ad. You can't put your headlines as big. You can't put your font as large. You got to decide that you're manipulating it. But as we started out, you know, if what we do is we modify it to use the same language that it's clearly readable by an average person, that would be up to the sponsor and committee, really, since you guys own it now, to decide what language you want to use.
Follow up.
Maybe it's follow up. Maybe it's new. I could see a deep fake being created. And I certainly want it to be readable. And maybe this is a way to keep it from happening, is if you just make it as big as the biggest, then they won't have any room to do any of the faking. But I think there has to be a balance. And, you know, deep fake is manipulating word, you know, and it could be even, look, I don't have a dog, but I'd like a dog in my photograph. So I Photoshop a dog, which is AI Photoshop. And so now the disclaimer that says altered has to be bigger than the dog or the total content of the whole thing. So I can see applications in deepfake. I want people to know it's a deepfake. Sometimes I don't know if that would qualify as deepfake under this definition or not. If I don't own a dog and I put one in my, so, you know, it's generated to influence, to give a loving feeling. So they don't all have to be bad feelings that we're trying to keep here. So just a question, and you know, let's put it out there for talking.
Through the chair to Representative Johnson, Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office. I would, yeah, I completely understand that. And you could take that analogy far enough that it would absolutely apply. I really don't think adding the dog would fundamentally be a different understanding of the impression of the individual's appearance, action, speech. You know, I don't think that would fall into this category, although you could make it go far enough that it would fundamentally. If you know, if we did an image and I look like a strapping man with, you know, big muscles and whatever, you know, maybe that would be far enough that it would say, hey, it's fundamentally different from reality. And, you know, should we get to the point where we're requiring, you know, that larger font, I think is a legit question for the committee.
See, I believe we have Representative Sumner, Representative Groh, Representative Gray. Not right now. Representative Groh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a series of questions about the electioneering section or deepfake section. I have a question about the what's still called child pornography in this bill. So through the chair, does electioneering have a definition elsewhere in statute?
Through the chair, Bob Ballinger represents the Anson's office to Representative Groh. The answer is yes, it has a couple different definitions, and it's kind of actually in two parts. So, and this may be something Ian can explain a little better because he explained it to me, but you have electioneering is defined, and then you have communication is defined. The reason why it's difficult to take either one of those and make this make sense, and so we adopted this. One of the things is both of them deal with a limited window, right? So 30 days before a primary, 60 days before a general election. So you could use as much deepfake as you wanted as long as you didn't do it during that time. So we took those dates out as far as the definition. So the answer is it's sort of, but kind of in two parts.
Okay, follow up. Sir, I want to talk about the nature of the image making and how this would work. How many people need to see an image? And I guess one example that Ms. Staff and I have discussed a little bit is if I used artificial intelligence to make a video for personal use that mocks, embarrasses a politician that I don't like, how many friends would I need to show it to this become actionable, if I'm making sense here, in terms of how this would work?
Through the chair, Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office, to represent Grow. I mean, the answer to that is, like good attorneys, it depends, right? So if you go and you look at the question, electioneering communication, did you do it with the intent to, and would a reasonable person think you did it with the intent to alter a person's vote? You know, are these people voters? Did you share it with them to alter their vote? And then at that point, somebody else would have to find out, and they'd have to demonstrate the damages, or maybe they can make you pull it down from your wherever you have it posted if they get an injunctive relief. Probably from a practical standpoint, if you're sharing with a few friends, would never become an issue. But if you are trying to use that material to manipulate the election, you meet all these elements, then you could be liable.
Follow up.
Sir, I want to talk about two other areas here in the election deepfake area, like I said before I go to the child pornography area. As to falsified images in the disclosures, piggybacking off the Representative Johnson's comments, if we're talking about falsified images, shouldn't the disclosure be at least as big as the headline?
Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office, through the chair to Representative Groh. I think that's a question for the committee. I mean, honestly, I you know, if I'm trying to put myself in your position, and the answer even then is I'm probably I don't know. I think it's definitely worth a conversation.
I also, wanted to go to this, if I could, Madam Chair. The definition of artificial intelligence here on page 3 in lines 19 through 22, which is similar, actually, in both sections, the child pornography and I guess identical in both the child pornography and the electioneering provisions of the bill. I'm trying to get an idea of the scope here. There's a certain thing called Grammarly, which is a device that's used to help people write. It's installed on software. There's also Photoshop, which has existed for a while. There's ChatGPT, search engine AI. And if possible, sir, could you talk more about the scope of what you see here and what fits under this definition?
Through the chair, staff for Representative Vance to Representative Groh. I think everything that you just mentioned, and I'm sure I'm not quite as confident about Photoshop, but I would be shocked if it doesn't use some form of AI. Grammarly is very proud, you know, they are AI generated, and I use it all the time, highly recommended. But then the other things are all AI. The question then becomes, are you using it to create a deep fake as defined in here, and then using it in electioneering, or using it in a form to making, you know, new children that would be child sexual abuse material? And then at that point, it would become, but the answer is yes. All those things, I think, are AI.
Okay.
Follow up.
I'm sure. I'd like to move, if I could, to the, on page two, there's, in this provision of child pornography or child, we now, we hope, as you said, soon called child sexual abuse material. And I want to say that I used to prosecute child abuse cases, including child sexual abuse cases. This is awful, terrible conduct. But I want to draw some distinctions here in terms of understanding what we're doing. In this definition, this new definition, the new language, there's discussion of, or there's a statement about using artificial intelligence to appear to depict a child under 18 to enter 18 years of age engaging in the conduct, and that a depiction is recognizable as an identifiable actual child by this child's face, likeness, or other distinction characteristics. I want to get at part of what we're talking about here. I think we all recognize, if you take a picture of Billy or Susie down the street that you've snapped in a park and make it look like Billy or Susie, a child is, you know, having sex, we all recognize very bad conduct needs to be severely prosecuted. Is there a distinction in the what this legislation does, sir, in terms of, on the other hand, we have in a idealized or sort of artificially created child that doesn't exist in the world, if I'm making sense. I think some people would say that's a different thing, right? There's no Billy or Susie involved. This is X who doesn't exist. I first want to talk about, first, is the distinction I'm making sense? And I'd like to discuss it in terms of this legislation, please, sir. Yep. Through the chair.
Bob Ballinger, staff representative of Nance's office, through the chair to Representative Groh, 100%. So I think that there's kind of three different issues when looking at it, and all kind of wrapped in AI, is you have the kid that you take a picture of down the road, and then you modify the picture to make it appear to be child sexual abuse material. In that case, that has been prosecuted in Alaska, and it can be prosecuted, and there's no question about that, and we do, and it's treated as child pornography or child sexual abuse material. The next question is you take a completely AI generated, but it's manipulated to look like a legitimate person without using their picture. So I can't even think of a child actor, but you type in AI, make a naked picture of this child actor, right? In that case, that would be somebody who's recognizable. There's a real person, a real kid out there who is being victimized, even if their image was never used. And that's what this bill is trying to get at. What I wish this bill could get at and probably couldn't get at, and it is an issue that I think that people need to start talking about, is exactly what you just mentioned, is there is no real kid, but it looks like a real kid. And it can do all the terrible, horrible things that you see with CSAM online, but there's no real kid involved at all. And I don't know that that's prosecutable. It's not prosecutable under our current laws. It wouldn't be under this either. Probably should be. But I also think the at least under current Supreme Court jurisprudence, that you couldn't prosecute it.
Okay. Follow up. Sir, someone who's actually prosecuted in this area, not child pornography per se, but child abuse cases. But, you know, thinking about how prosecutions actually would work, the depiction is recognizable as an identifiable actual child by the child's face, likeness, or distinction characteristics. Is the intent of this legislation, as you see it, that there be a jury question about whether this is an identifiable actual child? I'd like you to describe more about how that would work, and if you could, sir, please.
Bob Ballinger, staff representative, Vance to Representative Groh. I mean, I think it would be. I think part of the jury instructions, you'd have to put each of the elements in here. And so it would have to be something that the jury would look at, and they'd say, would a reasonable person think that this was an actual child? Part of the prosecutor's job would probably be to say, look, here's little Susie. This guy has been creeping around on little Susie, has some sort of connection. All those facts would come in, and it'd be on the prosecutor, the state's burden to prove that this guy was making an image that ended up was supposed to look like little Susie. And I apologize for every little Susie out there.
Right. And I appreciate that. I want to stress again the, and I understand the dual purposes of this legislation, Madam Chair. I think they both involve complicated issues. And I just want to stress again the importance of us thinking clearly through the implications here, because this is different, as I keep saying, different territory than a lot of other legislation that this legislature considers. And thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm just actually thinking about, and certainly that's a horrible circumstance, but also what if somebody creates deep fake pornography of an adult? I mean, perhaps that should be defamation per se at a minimum. I mean, because certainly that could be very damaging for somebody, and maybe isn't criminal. Maybe it should be criminal at a lower charge, but certainly that's a very real possibility outside of election year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Bob Ballinger, staff representative Vance, through the chair, Representative Sumner, it would be defamation per se, actually for two different possibilities. Is if you publish material of a sexual nature in Alaska, it is per se defamation. You still got to prove the other elements of, but as far as damages, it's assumed damages. And in this case, that's one thing that we changed by changing the defamation, is that if you use a deep fake in the situation, whether it's a deep fake showing them kicking puppies when they really didn't kick puppies, or you know, in some type of sexual act, then it would be defamation per se.
Follow up, Representative Sumner. That's in section one of the bill. Representative Gray.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I have questions in two different areas. The first one, I'm going to follow up on Representative Johnson's line of questioning, talking about, again, sort of taking the step back and doing like the very basic changes. I was even thinking about white teeth. If you had a photo with white teeth, it's a campaign, and I have my name very large, do I have to, if I've whitened my teeth, which I need to, do I put this image has been manipulated as large as my name? I mean, I guess that would be pressure on the candidates to not whiten their teeth. But here's where it gets interesting. Maybe whitened teeth doesn't fundamentally change your impression of me. But I think everyone in the room, maybe wrong, but most people in the room have seen realtors on the on their signs, and you meet that realtor and you have no idea that that person is the person on that sign, and that is men and women. They look nothing like that sign. They look like a different person. Mm-hmm. That realtor needs to have this image has been manipulated on their sign. I mean, but I know that's not really where we're going, but I just want to ask that question. I want to bring that up, and then I have a second line of questioning.
So Bob Ballinger, staff for Representative Vance, to the chair, to Representative Gray. I mean, the answer is it probably wouldn't fundamentally change. I mean, it's you know, the realtors use pictures that are 20 years old. That's how they get there. My last campaign, I used pictures about 5 years old because I was about 40 pounds lighter. You know, like, so it people, you could do that, but it once again, it has to get down here, and if you can't define fundamentally change as something more than whitening your teeth, then it gets to the point where it's kind of diluted and everything would be deep fake.
I would also like to ask a couple of questions through the chair about the top of page 2, where Representative Groh was asking the questions. I too have concerns about AI generated images of minors that maybe aren't based on a real person. In my head, I can think of it in a complicated way that you could have someone who's 18 but looks like they're 14 or 15, and so therefore that 18-year-old could technically participate in pornography, perhaps, and it's not sexual minor abuse material because the model is 18. But and so that gets complicated because if you have an AI-generated image that looks like a 14-year-old, we're like, well, some 18-year-olds look like they're 14, but you know what? I don't know any 18-year-olds that look like a 5-year-old. So I feel like you at a certain point there's a line where you can say you cannot create material. And I wondered about deleting. If we delete on line 5, what would happen if we just deleted and the depiction is recognizable as an identifiable actual child by the child's face, likeness, or similar characteristics?
Through the chair, staff for Representative Vance to Representative Gray. The answer is it probably almost definitely would be considered unconstitutional, at least until it got to the Supreme Court. So all of the courts on the lower level under current jurisprudence would, if they're going to stick with what has been decided on the First Amendment, that would probably violate the First Amendment. And this is a great conversation with Casey Stroder, with Department of Law, because I really think that's a problem we're going to face, right? So if Alaska wants to be the test case and wants to have this law struck down until it's appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, that, I mean, I feel like somebody needs to do it because I don't like the idea of them being able to just do that. However, right now, this also has not been tested. However, since it looks like a real person, we feel like you could fit that in because there's a real victim. And so that's why it's drafted with that language is it's we feel like it's the best that we could do and still have it held up in court.
Follow up. What about if we left that whole part 2 from line 3 to line end of line 6 in, but added a section without that, but said material has been manipulated, created, or modified using artificial intelligence to depict a child under 10 years of age. Like if we just picked like a much lower number as a test case for, you know, creating sexual material with small children, mm-hmm. even if they're not based on real children, I think let's send that to the Supreme Court.
Through the chair, staff for Representative Vance, Representative Gray, I think that's a question for the committee and probably, you know, I mean, I don't have a vote, but you'd have my vote.
Thank you.
Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair, in a prior election contest, I ran against a member currently serving in this body, and him or his associates photoshopped me into, I guess, a T-shirt that said something about Planned Parenthood. Or would that be considered defamation per se under this, assuming and I think most Photoshop programs do use artificial intelligence.
Through the chair, staff for Representative Vance, Representative Sumner, the answer is probably not, because you're an elected official or somebody who's running for a campaign political official, the standard is so much higher, and so it wouldn't be defamation per se. However, under this electioneering communication, if this were in place, The answer is I don't know. I think that there's a chance that would be considered to be a deepfake if it was made to look legitimate, right? So if it looked like you were really wearing the shirt and it looked real. So if it didn't look real, then the answer is no. But if it was made to look like you were really wearing the shirt, then I think they would fall into a deepfake. It'd be using AI and a deepfake and electioneering communication. And you'd have the ability to file suit and get an injunction if this law were in place.
Follow up, Representative Carpenter.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I'm gonna go back to this concept of using the artificial intelligence to create an image of something that doesn't currently exist. Newspaper reporter gives. It interviews an individual, and it's about an election-related article. And that article is published quoting that individual. And then someone else reads that article, takes the quoted text, plugs it into artificial intelligence, and says, give me a likeness of the individual who gave the interview and use this quoted text to have that individual speaking that quoted text to a crowd, or it doesn't probably doesn't really matter what they're speaking it to, but it's something other than the interview that was given. Would that be considered deepfake? And the second question would be, would that be considered defamation?
Through the chair, staff, or Representative Vance to Representative Carpenter, the answer would be, it depends. Is that fundamentally different than what actually occurred? It kind of goes back to the questions that we had before of the video on the floor versus a video in front of a crowd. I don't think that a court would interpret that as something that is, you know, part B or two of the thing is the definition of deepfake is conveys a fundamentally different understanding or impression of the individual's appearance, action, speech. So if it is actually speech they made, and it isn't designed, like if you did it, but, you know, during that, you know, you had them, you know, appear to be doing something terrible, right? You know, like if it's just him speaking that his actual quote, it probably wouldn't fall into deepfake.
Follow?
Not this definition, deepfake.
And assuming that they use the disclosure statement, then it most definitely would not be.
It would deepfake. It's a defense. It's still, you can say it's still deepfakes and electioneering, but it's a defense if you use the disclosure. So if you use disclosure, it's no harm, no foul.
So we've never had this capability before, Madam Speaker. You've got years and years of quoted text available to artificial intelligence that goes back years, decades for some people. And artificial intelligence could then use that to create a speech in a video form to then be used for electioneering purposes that has nothing to do with what was currently spoken in the current context, but that could be used to portray a candidate in a certain light. That's not covered in this bill.
Through the chair, staff, Representative Vance, one thing that you said there that would make me change probably my interpretation to Representative Carpenter is it's a new context, right? So if you're having a speech and you're giving a speech about, you know, X, Y, or Z, and they take that speech and there's a new situation and they apply that speech with the intent to convey a completely different message, right? Even if it is all your words, but they use it in a context that makes it look like, you know, you're talking about one thing when really you were talking about something else, or the facts on the ground completely change. You're in support of some, you know, person, and later on that person turns out that he's a terrible, awful, horrible, low-down scoundrel, and then they use that speech in when you're in support of such a person. That would then fall in, I mean, from my interpretation, because it's a fundamentally different message than what you actually conveyed.
Okay.
I've lost track. Who is next in the queue?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Stancliffe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Cronk. We're all getting a tremendous education on something that's moving so rapidly. We don't have words to fix it, unless maybe they're AI generated, and AI can maybe fix AI. They certainly have been able to communicate without being asked to communicate. They've developed programs to protect themselves they weren't asked to develop. And this is a lot of this is getting into what we in this business see on TV and hear on the radio. But on the broad scheme of things, to what extent do we have the right to alter reality for our personal gain or to cause harm? Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about altering what reality is for personal gain or to create harm. Then the question comes, if you're in this business, if someone does something that was very clever using AI and you're defeated because that made the difference in the election, could that be considered harm? Well, I think it can be. I think it can be if it starts to get personal. It starts to, if you're labeled as something you are not as a person, if your moral turpitude is questioned to the point where people don't want to meet you in the supermarket anymore, it's a problem. But if you try to get too deep into the details, as any lawyer will tell you, it gets to be a nightmare. So I think if we, Representative Kronk simply asks that we work further on this CS, to having listened to all that was said here today, and then bring it back before you, Madam Chairman, and see if we, or Chair, and see if we can't come up with some sort of solution that would be passable constitutionally. So my question would be for your counsel at this point, what is the most questionable constitutional issue raised in this legislation, this version?
Madam Chair, Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office, I think the biggest constitutional question is what was raised by Representative Gray is, you know, if we have material that we all say is heinous and we'd like to be able to do something about it, but there actually is not, under current jurisprudence, there's actually not an individual who's associated with it as far as a victim, then you know, maybe you could say all children are victims. Maybe we'll get the court to eventually agree with that, but under current jurisprudence, that question in a world that was outside of AI has been brought before the court, and the court said if there are no victims, then there's no crime. And so I do think that we're in a different world because we do have AI, and it's not just somebody trying to draw a picture; it's something much worse. And it'd be interesting to see how the court would deal with it today.
Well, I've enjoyed this robust discussion, and it's one that we really need to have. These are great questions. Representative Sumner, further questions?
Sorry, Madam Chair. I was just curious, through the chair, in the case that we had a statute of that sort and it was struck down, could it void all prosecutions under that statute, or what would be?
Through the chair, Bob Ballinger from Representative Vance's office. I'm sorry, I thought your question was going to be something different. It wouldn't affect the rest of the bill, but yes. So if you had a statute and we prosecuted under that and it was struck down, then any other process, they would have a right to an automatic right to retrial, and frankly they'd just probably be released if that was the only thing they were convicted of.
Follow up, Madam Chair. I think while the representative's intentions are good, I would probably oppose an amendment of the sort I think he's thinking of for that reason. Thank you.
As Mr. Ballinger stated, when there's a crime, we have to prove that there's harm to a victim. And I think that's the challenge with the AI of creating child likeness, doing inappropriate acts, is who's the victim. Now, I think that there's a very strong argument to prove that pornography harms people. But again, that is a very different conversation than the direction of this bill, which there are clear victims that we want to first protect. And, you know, just hashing that out, I think is a very good direction to go. And making sure that we're not making sweeping changes that impact the way that we've always done elections and didn't realize that we are using AI, but having a clear disclaimer that is consistent with our other disclaimers, I think is probably going to be a good conversation on what we feel is appropriate for the use of deep fakes, because they've been coming at us so quickly in our society that sometimes you have to blink a few times to see if an image really is a deep fake. And that, I think, the public for consumer protection needs to have some type of notification that says this is a deep fake. So Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. And we maybe need to take a step back in regards to the pornography or child sexual abuse material and recognize that while we may be seeing an image on a TV screen or computer screen of an act that looks like pornography, it didn't actually involve the filming of humans, and therefore is it technically pornography? Because pornography is the filming of and depiction of humans doing some activity. And in this case, it is not a human doing the activity. It's just a bunch of ones and zeros arranged on the screen in a way. So, and I can see that the technology would likely be headed in a direction that says in a virtual reality scenario, you've got all sorts of activities that can be created artificially that have nothing to do with humans, but they look like humans. And therefore, what is the correct behavior, or what behavior would you want to prohibit in that reality, right? Mm-hmm. That has nothing to do with pornography. Mm-hmm. It is something completely different.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. And as Mr. Ballinger explained, a lot of this bleeds over into First Amendment rights, which is a whole different ballgame. It is my will that we keep as tight to not venture, not push the envelope with the courts on what is constitutional right now, because Alaskans are expecting us to make quick adjustments in the law to protect their rights when it comes to deep fakes. And I think that there is a will in this legislature to do that. We have a direction here. I hate to set a hard amendment deadline, but I am going to set one for this next Tuesday, March 26th at 5 p.m. I would encourage you, if you do have ideas right now, you can speak with my office, with Mr. Sandcliffe, talk to Legislative Legal about drafting, and we could either come up with a committee substitute or individual amendments. If we could have some prepared for next Monday so that we could continue this great dialogue, I think that would be helpful. But I set it for after the deadline for after that so that we could at minimum be prepared for Wednesday. But this is something that I see the other bodies working on the same issue. There's a couple of bills. This is a great opportunity for us to move and impact things in a very quick nature to protect Alaskans from things that they're really frightened about is going to impact their lives. So great appreciation for all of the work that both Mr. Ballinger and Mr. Sandcliffe have done on this, and for all of the questions from committee members. This is the kind of stuff that I think is fun for us to do, to dig into this policy, that this will be this use of AI will be an ongoing conversation, as Representative Sumner has said, because it's moving so much faster than what we can do here in the legislature. So that concludes our business for today. The House Judiciary Committee will meet again on Monday, March 25th at 1 p.m. with an agenda forthcoming. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect it is 2:37 p.m.